Anybody think they got the least amount of sleep last night?
Woo!
How many hours?
Three.
Oh, a week, bro. That's too many.
Yeah, that's terrible.
We got two back here. Anybody get less than two? No all-nighters? No all-night prayers? Yeah, me either. Three's not weak, dude. That's terrible.
Sorry.
Do you apologize? I forgive you? Oh, yeah. Do better tonight, okay? Maximum 1 hour tonight. It's funny. We call them retreats. But we don't sleep. And then we get home, we need to go on another retreat.
Yeah.
All retreats are like that. Even the ones that you're going to chill this afternoon, and you're going to go to bed tonight, you're going to be so tired.
Right.
It's going to be awesome. Turn your Bible to Matthew chapter 20.
All
right. We're talking about the revolutionary man.
Come on.
All right? Revolutionary man. What is a revolutionary man? When you guys think of that word, what comes to mind? Mm. Not rhetorical question. Raise your hand. You can think of a person, maybe a type of person. Here.
Mission-oriented.
All right. Yeah.
Warrior.
Totally.
Radical change. Strong-hearted.
Strong-hearted. I like that.
Maximus decimus meridius.
Speak my language. Yes. Who's all those things? I had another hand back here.
A leader.
Any thoughts? Revolutionary man.
Different perspective.
Okay, yeah, I think they do have a different perspective.
Strong will.
Say it again anyway, it's stronger.
Indomitable will.
That sounds like a...
English?
Jurassic World, the Indominus Rex, right?
Yeah. Self-sacrificing for the benefit of others.
Self-sacrificing for the benefit of others?
Black Panther!
To my shame, I haven't seen it yet. I'm dying. No spoilers.
Dude, let's go, man.
Someone who's weak. Risk taker. True. Last one.
Ulysses S. Grant.
That's right. I don't know him personally. He did some things. You know, I guess it depends on the context.
All right.
If you have a revolutionary talent in the sports world, you're a revolutionary man. You're the fastest runner. Anybody see when Usain Bolt got the jibba?
No.
That was a hand. Anybody see when he set the record?
See
when he did when he crossed the line? Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
I was like, dang. He slowed down to pump his chest. He wasn't even finished yet. The strongest man, you guys ever seen the strongest man CrossFit competitions?
Yeah.
That was impressive. 18, 23 burpees. These guys are on another, they're insane.
Yeah.
Anybody see just like the bench press? These people are like disgusting. Or just the most versatile talent. That's a revolutionary man in the sports world.
Right.
Or sometimes you're revolutionary if you're first to accomplish something, the first to walk on the moon. That's revolutionary. I wonder how they figure that out. Because, you know, he wasn't the only guy that went to the moon. How did they figure out? Anybody know the guy who walked the moon, what his name was? Neil Armstrong. Anybody know the second guy? Sorry? Dang, you guys actually knew. Anybody know the third guy?
No.
But you knew the first one better, all right? This is a wise group. Your astronomy is strong. The first to reach the bottom of the sea. That's not a question. I have no idea who that was. The first to fly an airplane. You know, the Wright brothers. I'm actually related to them distantly. That's an amazing story. Some people are revolutionary because they brought about some extraordinary change. They fought social injustice. That took on a corrupt power. All revolutionary men have something in common. It's that they all have greatness within them.
Right.
There's something great about them. Most of what we talked about was there's this indomitable will. There's this strength of will. There's this strong heart. They're radical. They're different.
Right.
Something about these men. And you know, there are so many subcultures in the world, aren't there?
Yeah.
What do I mean by subculture? I mean, everybody knows about Steph Curry's three-point shot.
Right.
Everybody knows about LeBron James. I mean, everybody, right? You don't know LeBron James, I'm like, where are you from?
Yeah.
Like, do you have anything television, like sand to write on? Like, everybody knows LeBron James' name. Why? Because he's dominant, right? Everyone knows when Aaron Rodgers got injured last year.
Hey.
Man, the whole, Was that a cheer for Ant Russia for his injury? Okay, I was about to be like, that hurt the whole NFL. I was like, I care a lot less now.
Wow.
You know, but there are subcultures you don't know about. Anybody in here, is gonna, we're going to see some. Anybody here a big anime fan?
Ooh.
You know, I'm amazed by how many people are anime fans. It might be the most diverse group of sub, like, I look around and people are like, anime, I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah, dude, you're not. I'm like, oh, like, they kind of turned around on me, you know? So it's crazy. I remember, and I want to, within those subcultures, there's greatness. And like only you know, only that group knows. Like, oh yeah, that guy is amazing. And you're like, what are you talking about? Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And whenever I get into a group that has a subculture, no matter what it is, I want to fit in. I don't care if it's like men's ballet. If it's cool, I'm like, yeah, cool. Yeah, I do that. You know what I mean? You're like, you want to fit in. I mean, I think about, I remember one time, I'm a snowboarder.
Right.
But I'm kind of an amateur snowboarder because I live in Florida. So when I lived in California, I snowboard a lot. And so I'd go out to Colorado. My uncle lives there, and we go snowboarding for a whole week. Anybody here snowboard? I was like, dang. No. All right, I got two. So there's a certain way of talking when you're snowboarding. And a lot of you won't connect to this, but I think I don't really know the lingo because I'm kind of a poser snowboarder, you know what I mean? And so I sold my board a couple of years ago because I live in Gainesville and I needed the money. And the guy that came was obviously a real boarder. And you could tell too, he's exactly what you expect. Just California, but he lived in Florida. I mean, he had the long hair, he wore the snowboarding clothes, the whole thing. And so he's like, hey bro, like, how's the ride? And I'm like, oh snap, my God. I'm like, it's smooth, bro. You know what I mean? Like, I just He's like, how's the edge? I'm like, it's a clean edge. I'm like, don't ask me anymore, you know? And he's like, you take it off jumps? I'm like, I've been in the air before with it, you know? Like, I'm like, dude, just buy this thing, bro. Like, you know? I'm like trying to fit in, and every subculture has its greatness. Every single one. And they're all defined a little differently, aren't they? Yeah. Some of you guys, sports not your thing, but you kill it in Super Smash Brothers. Dominate. And in your world, you're like watching the YouTube videos, Super Smash. People are like, what are you watching? I'm like, nothing. You know what I mean? Like, and you're like, what are you watching, bro? It's like, Super Smash. It's not anything else. You know, it's like, you were like, struggling, bro? Then we all have our stuff. So the question is, how does God define greatness?
All right.
Okay. All right.
You know, the dictionary will tell us greatness is something that's just more numerous, a great number of something. The coolest middle school kid in my time, the frosted tips on the spike tape. Man, that was cool. I never had the guts to do it. You know what? I'm married now. It ain't happening. Some of you still can. Because my wife says no. You'll get there. The NFL tells us if you have the best football instincts. The NBA says you have the best range. Politics say if you're the most progressive. The university says that A is what you're going for. But if you want to be a revolutionary man, you have to find your greatness. And that's my only point, is find your greatness. God never discourages greatness. He encourages it, but it's not what you think.
Right.
And while I agree with what everybody said about greatness, you'll find that God's definition of greatness is very different than our normal definition of greatness. And if you want to be revolutionary, you have to have greatness within you. So let's define exactly what God's looking for in a great man.
Come on,
Matthew chapter 20.
All right.
Look at verse 24.
Come on.
There's a story here. Some of you know it. Jesus had these 12 disciples, for those of you who are less familiar with the gospel. And the disciples, you would think being around the Son of God all the time, they would have learned some things. But amazingly, they argued about the dumbest things.
Right.
And one of the things they argued about was who was the greatest. Who was the greatest?
Right.
So it'd be like me and Nick walking down the road. And Charles is there. And we're walking and Dom's there and Nick says, you know, I think I'm the greatest. And Dom's like,
no way.
I don't know how it went, but Dom's like, don't know, bro. Like, I was there. You weren't there that one time, and Charles was like, neither of you were there. And I did that, and I was like, well, I was the first. I became a Christian before you. I jumped out of my boat when Jesus called me. Whatever, whatever, however you define it. It's kind of hard to imagine that conversation, though, isn't it? Like,
right, yeah.
We have that conversation maybe, but it's very subtle. We're not like, I'm better than you, you know? Like, so they had some guts. They were passionate guys. Jesus overhears it.
Right.
Not the conversation with Jesus over here. They're probably like, shh. Jesus is like, guys, like, I can read your minds. You know what I mean? Like, just say it out loud. It's going to hurt worse. And Jesus sits them down, and he has this teaching moment with them. It's really powerful.
Come on, bro.
What do you say starting in verse 24? This is actually a slightly different story. This had happened, and then James and John go to Jesus, and they say, hey, can we be at your right and left hand in heaven? What? That is bold. And there's something I like about that, and there's something I really don't like about that.
Right.
Like, I like that person, and I kind of am really annoyed by that person, you know? I think we all are a little bit, unless you're that person. Maybe you're annoyed with yourself. The other 10 hear about this. In verse 24, they were indignant. They were angry. Jesus called them all together, sat them down, and he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them, but not so with you. Instead, what does he say? Whoever wants to become great must be your servant.
Right.
And whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many.
Mm.
How does Jesus, the Son of God, God incarnate, define greatness? He says, if you want to be great, you need to be the least.
Mm.
The slave of, we don't like the word slave.
Yeah.
Our understanding of the word slave brings up a lot of feelings. Either feelings of shame or anger, usually, depending on what race you are. You know, I think about slavery, I feel shame for all white people. I feel like, how? Racism is like the height of human stupidity.
Right.
It is so dumb to me. And it just proves to me that Satan's real. I'm like, how can we hate each other because of the color of our skin? It's
right.
It's shocking to me.
Right,
but we
bro.
Find a way to hate each other because there's an enemy. And we don't like the word slave because it means oppression.
Right, right.
You know, it means someone's lording it over you. And he says that you make yourself a slave to everyone around you if you want to be great.
Wow. Come on.
That is challenging.
Right.
That means the servant is the greatest among you. God does not care how fast you can run. He doesn't care how progressive you are. He doesn't care how many words you know, how intelligent you are. He doesn't
right.
care how cool you are, how cool those frosted tips are. You know what I mean? For that guy who obviously still wants to do it and was trying to live vicariously through me earlier. He doesn't care about any of those things. If you want to be great, you have to be the least.
Come on.
We don't like that. The world, that's not the world's music. And we don't like God's music very much. We're going to hit on 5 things that are the hallmarks of a humble man.
Come on.
Okay? Basically, subpoints of my 1 point. Find your greatness. Let's talk about how to find it, okay?
All right.
I'll tell some stories along the way. Some funny ones, some not so funny ones, some happy ones. What I find is that I see a lot of men who care what they look like, who care about the women that give them attention, and the church is no different.
Wow.
I see a lot of men who care how they appear, see a lot of men who care about the wrong things. I don't find very many that care about this like they should.
Yeah.
It's hard to find. And when I see them, they stand out to me. Because you can learn this about somebody, how humble you are. I can learn it in about 20 minutes. If the right questions are asked, just by your demeanor.
Mm.
And we're going to talk about what's the demeanor of a truly humble man, because that's great. And if you want to be revolutionary, humility is essential. It's not an option. It's non-negotiable. Some of these other things are not humility. So let's define it. What is it? Number one, it's admitting you're wrong when you're wrong. It's admitting you don't know when you don't know. When you don't understand. In Colossians 3, verse 12, just write the reference down. He says, we have to clothe ourselves with humility. Put it on like you're putting on clothing. I appreciate everybody put on clothing this morning. Thank you. The sisters appreciate it. You probably would have kicked out of the room. It would have been bad. We have to put on clothing, humility like clothing. And so that first one is admit you're wrong when you're wrong. Some of us just cannot do this. We just can't accept it.
Right.
I'm going to give you an example. So a lot of things changed when I got married. One of them was I really learned how many things I did wrong.
Right.
Not because my wife pointed it out, because sometimes she did. And this story is about that. But I just kind of noticed it myself. Because
right.
It's one thing when you're doing something alone, but when somebody's watching, you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this. So one day, I'm clipping my nails. Talk about it. Let me save you, okay? So I'm clipping my nails. Am I doing it over the trash can? Oh, no. Am I doing it over the sink? Oh, no. Outside? No. Where am I doing it? Kitchen floor.
Kitchen floor.
It's tile, bro. Sweep that up in like a week. It's all good. I'll get there. So I'm clipping up. We've been married for like a couple months. I'm not even like thinking about it.
Right.
And my wife goes, what are you doing? And I was like, what? You know, kind of like, what did I do? Like, oh, snap. Like, you know. And then and she didn't say anything. I looked down and I was like, have I been living this way? Just like, it just hit me. I was like, and I said to her, I looked down, I looked up, and I was like, honey, I don't know. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, this is disgusting. Like, these are like my dead, whatever, follicles? I don't even know what they're called. Like, it's just gross. I just know the word is gross, and it's all over the place. People are walking there. You know, it's just like, for my whole life, I've lived this way. And I remember in that moment, I was like, I'm wrong, and this is gross, and I need to change.
Right.
Kind of a shallow example, but there have been other times I've been wrong. And I'll tell you what, sometimes I haven't learned, and I keep making the same mistakes over and over. I grew up, and I learned to have a pretty biting tongue. I was really insecure growing up because of my size. I tried to find a picture for you guys. My 16-year-old license picture, I mean, you guys probably didn't know I was 30. Maybe you thought I was closer to 20. When I was 16, a 12 tops. I mean, I would go through the line right when I turned 16, 17, and I had my license, and I'd order, and I'd always be like, and they'd be like, yes, ma'am, that'll be $5. I'd be like, like, they always thought I was a girl. I would go to Denny's, and they'd be like, a kid's menu? And I'd be like, what? Until I was like 17.
Oh, wow.
Yo, that hurt. I was really insecure about that. And what I developed was a really sarcastic, biting tongue, because what I knew was that I had a quicker wit than a lot of people around me. They could hurt me, but I could hurt them back.
Wow.
And so I developed that, and I'll tell you what, it took me a long time to change that, to admit that was just my insecurities coming out.
Wow.
It took me a long time, and I didn't want to learn. I didn't like being told that I was wrong, or that what I was doing was wrong.
Wow.
That was hard for me.
Right.
It took a lot of humility. You know, I want to speak to those that are coming out that maybe this is kind of one of your first times out. Maybe you just got met. You're a friend of somebody. Maybe you're not a member of the church here. You're kind of trying to figure life out. I know some of you are in that boat. Humility? You will never get this. All this stuff that's happening. You know, everybody getting all excited about these songs about Jesus. You know, you're like, this is kind of like, I don't know, this is my scene. You're never going to understand this if you're not humble. And you know what? You're never going to move forward in life. And I have studied the Bible with a lot of people. And that's what we do, right? We study the Bible with you. And so if you want to learn about God, you'll probably be asked, hey, do you want to study the Bible? Some of you may be doing that. I've studied the Bible with, I don't know, I've been in maybe probably well over 1,000 Bible studies in my life. Maybe 2, I don't even know. Like in a decade of in the ministry, a lot.
Right.
And you know, I find very few of the men are truly humble.
Wow.
God has to humble them, and that always hurts more. Yeah. And when God has to tear you apart, it's just better to just tear yourself apart. Don't let God do it, because it's gonna hurt.
Right.
This is a moment for you.
Come on, bro.
It's maybe your first retreat of your life. Don't waste it. You could walk away from here and miss the most important moment of your life.
Wow.
Now that may sound kind of corny and religious to you. I'm just telling you, it is the truth.
Yeah.
I've seen it time and again. You got to get in a place where you're sitting down with the people and you say, teach me, even if you think you know. Because most people I teach think they know. It makes it harder for them to learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
You may be there. If you're there, you got to get out of that. Because you can't live like that. You're not going to be great like that.
Right.
We understand it requires a lot of humility, but we've all been there.
Right.
Are you great enough to learn from others? Number two,
come on,
accepting
bro.
That we need others to make it to heaven.
Amen.
Write this reference down. Proverbs 18, verse 24. Proverbs 18, verse 24 says, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A brother is born for adversity. I love that proverb. We need each other. God did not design Christianity as a lone wolf thing.
Yep.
I've seen so many people try it.
Right.
And it never, 100% of the time, it does not work.
That's right.
Come on.
Because you were not designed as a human that way. We need camaraderie. We need togetherness. You know one of the common denominators of everything that's happening with these school shootings? These people are all isolated.
Wow.
They are lonely. They don't have real friendships. People will say when they interview them, yeah, I thought I knew him, but I didn't know him. I never saw this coming. I didn't know. Man, that's scary stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have a best friend? Now, I'm not talking about like we hang out and we chill a lot. I'm talking about they know you.
Mm.
They see through you. You are they know you better than you know you.
Come on.
They know you don't have to say anything and they're like, what happened last night? That person, you know? We're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, shut up, come on, talk to me. Like, don't be dumb.
Yeah.
Like, we need those people.
Yeah.
I want to share about my best friend, just to give you guys a feel for what I think it looks like. My best friend in the world, his name's Stephen Little. He's a wild man. I am not a wild man. I'm like a very conservative man. I've had to create a wild side because being revolutionary requires some courage and some wildness. So I've had to like develop that. God's been like, let's get you some wild. Because growing up, it's like, that was not wild. I was the guy, Rob and I were talking. Rob's by nature a wild man. I didn't know that though, because he has tamed he's like controlled the wildness in spurts. You know, he's like, I'm a little wild man. And he's at home with his kids and his wife. He's like, I'm a cool dad. You know, and good for you. I was talking to Rob. Rob was crazy. He's the kind of guy that would be like, with his buddies, like, let's just go pool hop in people's houses or whatever. You know, let's go to a hotel and jump in the pool. I'd be the guy that'd be like, come on, guys, like, don't do that. You know, like, that would be, you know. I'm the guy you're like, man, let's wait till Kyle goes, then let's do whatever we want. We need a little wildness. The first time I met Steven was 11 years ago, and he had been a Christian for 3 months. And he walked in, and he had hair past his shoulders, gauges as big as you can get them before you can't seal them again. And, I mean, he was like, woo, you know, that guy. And he was doing that all the time. Woo, he's that guy, the woo guy, you know, that you're like, hey, that's cool, bro, but, like, time it well, you know. Like, don't be the guy that's like, woo, and you're like, not the right time. Wait for the moment. That rogue clapper, you're looking at the same person. The first time we ever hung out, he was like, bro, you want to go in my car and do donuts in the parking lot of Sports Authority? And I was like, oh, and he was like, dude, you're in college now. I was like, all right, you know? And so we just, in his little car, he called it the Humbler. That was his car. It was like the worst car ever. The tires had no tread. It was so dangerous, and I felt very unsafe. But for the first moment, I felt bonded because I just felt this guy could be himself with me. He didn't care what I thought.
Right.
And you know what I love about him? He has the most first century faith of everyone I met.
Wow.
He's just not, he doesn't care what people think. He's like Jesus in that way. He's not swayed.
Yeah.
He just doesn't care. And I need that in my life. And you know what? He needs me. He needs my spiritual outlook on his life too. It's kind of wild.
Mm-hmm.
He needs that. And we balance each other well. You know why I'm best friends with him? Not because we did donuts in the Humbler. You know? That doesn't create deep bonds of friendship.
All right.
That's just a start. That creates a casual, comfortable acquaintance. We have been in the battle together for 11 years, over a decade. We have studied the Bible with so many people. We have cried together. We have wept together. About our lives, about his life, about what's going on in my life. We have wept for the souls of others that have walked away. And we have stood there and said to people, so you realize that you're not a Christian and you are not going to heaven. And they said, yes. And then we said, so you're going to walk away? And they said, yes. And we wept to them together. Now, we have been in the trenches with each other through our relationships. Mm. We're so close that they sat us down before they had their first son. And they said, if we die, we want you to have our kids.
Wow.
We want you to be the parents of our children. Man, whoo, I got emotional. I was like, oh, snap. Like, I was not expecting you to say that. That's deep, man. His kids are my kids. And he lives in Virginia. I don't see him very much. I call him, like, twice a week. Even just for 10 minutes. Man, he is my best friend.
Wow.
And you know what? He knows over the phone what's going on in my life. Do you have people like that? Some of you are too isolated.
Mm.
You don't think you need people, and you're not ready to give up your independence because you don't want people to know what's really going on in your life.
Mm.
You got to let that go. We need each other so much.
Come on.
We cannot do this alone. We need to accept that. Number three, turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 12.
Come on.
You have to, if you want to be humble, if you want to be great, you have to admit, accept, and embrace your weaknesses. Admit, accept, and embrace your weakness. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. The story here, for time's sake, I'm going to summarize and we'll read one part. Paul is talking about, God gave me these amazing revelations, but to keep me from becoming conceited because he gave me so much, he put a thorn in my flesh. We don't know what this was.
Right.
Something that humbled him, though. Maybe it was an illness. Some people think maybe it could have been blindness of some sort. Something. And he said, I prayed and prayed and prayed that God would take this away from me, this weakness. Look at verse 8 of 2 Corinthians 12. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. And this is the part I want you to listen to. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses.
Mm.
I delight in insults. I delight in hardships. I delight in persecutions.
Right.
In difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. This is an interesting passage. And it's counterintuitive. Because we think when you're strong, you're strong.
Yeah.
You know? Who can do the most burpees? Who can do the most push-ups? That person's strong. The revolution is upside down.
Right.
It doesn't work like everything else works. We all have weaknesses. Do you know what your weaknesses are? Because before you can accept and embrace them, you have to identify them.
Right.
Some people don't know. And it's why Satan has a grip on you.
Because
you're not self-aware. Maybe you haven't maybe you have been intellectually dishonest with yourself.
Mm.
You have not allowed yourself to admit something.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just too arrogant to say it out loud. It's possible. I've been there. Mm. Here's how you figure out what your weakness is. Stick with me. This is a little strange. If you and Satan switched places, and you were Satan, and Satan was you, what would you do to take you to hell?
Wow.
How would you get you?
Wow.
You know, in James 1,
wow,
chapter 13, sin is described.
Mm.
And again, reference it, you can write it down. And it's not described as, and then sin just punches you in the face out of nowhere.
Mm.
You know, sin is like poison. It says, sin, from your own evil heart, it enters into your heart. It's like a parasite. It's small at first.
Mm.
And then it works its way through. It's conceived and eventually gives birth to death. But it's a slow movement. Some of you in here aren't listening. You're not listening right now. And it's the beginnings. It's that parasite. I'm not thinking about anybody in particular, but in a room this big, someone's struggling. Mm. Look, man, you do you.
Mm.
But if you don't listen to the word of God, you're going to be in real trouble in your life. It starts that small. I'm just not going to listen right now. I'm just going to, I'll look just this once. I'm not going to humble out here. That's where it starts. You know what? Satan's not going to be able to parade a beautiful woman in front of me and I'm going to sleep with her. That ain't going to happen.
Right.
I'm going to look away. I'm going to run away. He's not going to get close. But you know what Satan would have to do to me? It's a slow death.
Right.
He has to make me feel like, Kyle, you want these brothers in New York to like you more than you want them to listen to the message.
Mm.
That's where he's going to start with me.
Wow.
He's going to stroke my ego. And then he's going to use people that think I did a great job. And he's, oh, you did so great. He's going to get me arrogant. And then he's going to say, you don't need to talk about this, you're fine. You already know, people think you're humble, you're fine, don't worry about it. That's where it starts. And then he's going to start injecting the old addiction I had into pornography in my younger life. He's going to bring that back very subtly. Well-intentioned. Maybe I'm doing research on Google Images for a sermon. He's going to throw something at me.
Wow.
And I'm going to look. I'm not going to talk about it because, well, I'm a preacher now. I shouldn't. I don't need to talk about this.
Right.
I'm fine.
Yep.
See where it starts?
Right.
How far down the road are you? What would you do if you were Satan?
Wow.
That's how you figure out your weaknesses. Once you figure it out, you have to embrace them. What does that mean? It means that, look, I, Kyle Eastman, am arrogant. It is my nature.
Wow.
Do you not like this about myself? I don't like that I'm entitled. I'm ashamed of that weakness.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? This is who I am. And I may have this my whole life.
Right.
But I don't have to be arrogant just because my nature is to be arrogant.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We have something in each of our characters. That's what you are without God. But with God, you can be something else.
Yeah.
If I embrace that and tackle it, I then can become the most humble man I know. That's my goal.
Right.
It's kind of a weird goal, because when do you know if you're actually humble? You know what I mean? That gets all kinds of weird.
Right.
If you didn't understand it, that's fine. If it's weird, maybe only really prideful people understand that. And what I've found is that because I've embraced my arrogance, I know I need humility more than the next man.
Yeah.
And it makes me stronger. It really does.
Mm-hmm, right.
Because I think about it all the time. I read books on it. I ask people, do you think I'm humble? That's a terrifying question.
Right.
And then I say, don't answer me right now. Think about it and come back to me. Because the moment you're like, no, bro, you're great. But then later, they're like, actually, tell me in a week after hanging out with me. Tell me in a year after you've gathered some evidence. Come to the courtroom and prove to me that I'm arrogant. Those are hard questions. When's the last time you asked somebody, did you think that I'm humble?
Mm.
Open that door. You got the guts for it?
Mm.
Come on, bro.
Wow.
We'll see. Mm. I think a revolutionary man has to have the guts to ask that kind of question.
Mm.
What I find...
Wow.
Is that the most humble people I know are also the most confident people I know.
Right.
Sometimes people, because they've embraced their weaknesses and they're secure in them because God makes their weaknesses
strong. Come on. Come on, bro.
What I found is that, talking to Rob about this, most people I meet in the church are like, I'm the man. Some people are, but they don't last very long or they humble out pretty quick.
Yeah.
They just get decided by like 20 people. You know, they're like, people are like, dude, relax. You look like an idiot, you know? And I've had that said to me before. You look dumb. I'm like, oh, snap. I don't want to look dumb, you know? Honestly, most of the time, it's insecurity. Oh, no, I can't do it. Like, I feel like I can't. Like, oh, man, I messed up. Like, you mess up and you just like, oh, you know, you just like melt immediately. No, I'm not, I don't, you know, like, this is how I'm like, I'll be humble. Like, that's not humility.
Oh, wow. Come on, bro.
Well, I don't even, that's just insecurity.
Right.
They're different things.
Right. Mm.
Humble people are confident. They embrace everything about themselves. I'm a total, not even closet, I'm a total nerd.